You're listening to the Permaculture Princess podcast, episode number 20. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to a fellow seeker of holistic and vibrant living, Jessica Marcy. Jessica is a wife, mom, and environmental engineer from upstate New York. She is a champion for sustainability and the local food movement, as well as an avid cook. At home, she enjoys gardening, hunting, fishing, foraging, crafting, and adventuring with her family. Clearly, there is a lot I could ask Jessica, but today I want to focus on the practicality of cooking with garden and foraging harvests. I also want to talk about her wellness journey and share some insights to seeking sustainability with a family. So stick around to get to know my friend, Jessica Marcy of Sweet Love and Ginger. Welcome to the Permaculture Princess podcast. This is a space for lifting up elegant sustainability and abundant practicality. I'm a lover of edible landscaping, plant-based nutrition, home remedies, green smoothies, and all things fitness. I am your host, Andrea Thompson, and as a personal trainer, wellness enthusiast, homesteader, mother, and Christ follower, this podcast acts as a platform for sharing actionable advice for a more abundant landscape and life. Hi, Jessica, and welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So I'm going to jump right in. I feel like I'm still very much getting to know you, and I'm having a great time doing that over Instagram. And I should probably mention you have a little one with you.
Yeah.
As they make themselves known quite readily. So let's start out with a brief introduction of who you are and also who is with you, where you're living, and what's brought you to seeking a life of greater sustainability and health.
Okay, so as you said, my name is Jessica. I live in upstate New York in zone 5. I'm right on the border of 5A and 5B. Like, literally, every time I look at a different website, it tells me I'm in a different zone.
I love that you recognize that you introduce your zones. Let's just say that's great.
It's important. So with me right today, I have my son, David, who's 7 months old. His brother is napping. So he's hanging out with us for this. He's supposed to be napping too, but we know how that goes.
Yes.
As far as seeking this lifestyle, I don't think I can say that I really tried to make it happen. I was kind of raised this way. So I always grew up in a family that hunted, fished, foraged, and gardened. Although my parents do not use permaculture principles and don't even use organic principles, like, in the slightest, even to this day. We argue about it all the time. They like their chemical pesticides and fertilizers, and it is what it is. And then my husband's family has this great organic garden, and they hunt, but they didn't really do anything with the meat so much. So when we got married, my family taught him how to butcher and cook meat properly, and his taught me how to mulch and compost and about perennials. And then from there, I stumbled on permaculture at some point, and being the engineer that I am, I got really into it and started reading all of the things, and slowly we've been implementing that stuff over time in our own home with our own family.
Awesome. I love it. I think that it's, and you're right. I have family as well that we have the conversation of how are we going to garden? In fact, my 90-year-old grandma lives with us. As you're aware, we have kind of an intentional community of generations, and she still cannot handle that I have mulch all over my garden. She's like, the soil needs to be there so you can pull the weeds better and blah, blah, blah. And it's always, you're right. It's just a continuous, like, no, grandma, it's intentional. I have intentionally putting mulch all over the place.
Yep. So same conversation.
Yeah. So I can relate. And I can also relate to hearing your little one in the background, because luckily my mom is with mine right now, but it's nap time is just always up in the air. We never know if nap time is happening or not.
Right.
So I am going to be a little bit selfish because, like I said, there's a lot we could go into, but the topic of my personal interest is your beautiful meals. I don't have quite the same eating habits as your family does. I'm mostly plant-based and I eat a mostly vegetarian diet, but I love the fact that you uphold a whole food, unprocessed way of eating. And I just want you to talk a little bit about those principles that you live by and what
inspires your kitchen?
Well, it's kind of funny. I feel like my feed doesn't always reflect how we actually eat, because we only eat meat once a day or less. But I feel like it's also those pictures that just are more striking and I end up on my feed more often.
Sure.
Because we like, you know, sustainably grown meats and we hunt a lot of our meats, we don't, you know, we try to keep it possible to eat that way. You know, when you're eating meat 3 meals a day, it's really hard to gather that amount of meat when you're doing it yourself. And one of the main reasons we care about where it comes from is not only for the health of the animals, but meat that's raised, I like to say happy, because there's so many buzzwords, it just gets too much. But meat that's raised happy the way it's supposed to is better for you. And we know that. We know there's more omega-3s and trace minerals and all the things that are better for you. So that's why we try to keep it that way. To answer your question, I tend to lean on simple things for most of our like everyday eating. I do like to get fancy sometimes on like a Sunday or whatever. But, you know, I think simple is best. We do, when I do say simple, and then we eat a lot of curries, which have a lot of spices in them, but I still find that simple because you saute the food and you add the spices, and it's not like there's 10 million steps to the process, you know?
Agreed, yeah.
I think especially if you're eating food that's grown well and food that has a lot of nutrients in it, it also has a lot of flavor in it, so you don't need to do a lot to it for it to taste good.
That's right. I think they're totally on point. And yeah, and I can agree with even we've added here and there. I have been more agreeable to eating meat here and there, especially like you said, if I know exactly where it came from, if I know how it was raised. And I think especially having, I don't personally hunt, but if I did, like if I had that hunting background, I think that that would, you know, help me understand this is what goes into taking an animal down, take, you know, like bringing it into our house. Like that's, there's a lot of respect that I think is built in that. And so I can definitely understand how that would inform your decisions there.
Oh, for sure. It's even interesting to me. We have a lot of friends that hunt, but not everybody does it as intentionally as we do. And it's interesting to see the different butchering styles. Some people are like, oh, I can get a whole deer processed in an hour or two. And we take like 5 or 6 yeah. because we're very intentional about everything that we use and the way that we prepare it. And then when people eat our meat versus theirs or like a processing plant's meat, we've always gotten compliments on how different it tastes from the other stuff, even if the deer were in the same area or whatever, because the way you butcher it and the way you age it and the way you spend the time with it does make a difference in the flavor too.
Interesting. So now I have to ask, I know you weren't necessarily expecting this. Do you guys sell some of your own meats and garden produce as well? Or is it mostly kind of a homesteading for yourself?
Right now it's mostly for ourselves. Selling meats in New York is a little difficult, so I don't think we'd ever do that. We do butchering for a couple of our friends. That's mostly my dad's thing. Cause he's very good at it and has been doing it for a lot of years. So a lot of his friends will come to him for that. But, and I would like to have a little market garden at some point, but right now we actually only live on just over 1/2 acre. We're looking for our future homestead. So we don't really have a ton of space to grow everything we would like for even ourselves, let alone to sell it.
Yeah. But cool. I think that's neat to hear people using the land that they have, even if it is a small amount. I had recently had our friend Jeremy on here, and he was on like a very, very small plot. And he was talking about more of the urban gardening, but you know what? There's space if you find it, especially coming from an engineering background. I can imagine you probably enjoy hunting down this space.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like I have a small forest garden. We have an urban tea garden. We have lots of very different zones in our small yard that we've been able to actually get a lot out of.
Very cool. So let's get super practical as far as using the examples. I guess give me some examples of foods that you harvest or purchase and how you utilize them. Like maybe something that you like to focus on, maybe kind of your go-to places. Like I say 3 to 5 of your go-to meals for your family.
That's actually really easy because we're pretty, like I said, pretty basic around here. One meal that we do all the time is just like a meat with a pan sauce. And I like that because it works for just about any kind of meat that we've caught. You just sear it, throw it in the oven to finish it off. And then when the meat is resting, I throw whatever jams or vinegars or spices or vegetables even right into the pan and make a sauce out of it. Sometimes that's how, if we're having a vegetable side, that's like how I'll throw it in there. And then you have that to top the meat or top if we're making potatoes or something else to go with it. And it's different every time because whatever herbs and jams we have on hand are different all the time. So we make that a lot. We also do a lot of curries and stews. We just love the flavor profile and we love that you can throw in all the veggies. So especially in the summers, I know people are like, you eat stew and curry in the summer. But yes, we do, because when you have so many vegetables and you're absolutely sick of eating squash, if you cover it with a bunch of spices, it's delicious.
Yeah.
And we eat a lot of salad. We like really big salads with greens and all of the veggies and sometimes meat, sometimes not. And because they're filling, they're easy for the kids to eat. And you can have leftovers for like a week. So those are like the things that are main rotation in our house on a daily basis.
Yeah, I probably should have decided on recording this after lunch because now I'm hungry. So like, give me an idea of what you are able to grow on your property. Like what kinds of foods do you get from your property? And then like, what do you usually buy, like outsource, say, from somebody else?
So there are a few things that I grow just so I can learn how to do them for later. Like I grow some beans for like drying, but clearly there's not enough room for me to have beans for the whole year, or potatoes or things like that. We grow a lot of peas because my husband loves them. Mostly like the novelty things we like to have, tomatoes and some squash and lots of lettuces and greens. But every year there's a local farm that I buy like pounds of tomato from to make our tomato sauces because I can all of our sauce and we don't have to buy that for the most part. And then there's a couple other farms that have you pick around us. So we'll go and we'll pick certain things. Like there's even one that has a green bean you pick, which is awesome.
Nice.
And then a lot of the stuff we have here, like I have a forest garden in back, so we get some fiddleheads and wild ginger and ramps from that, but it mostly is there so that it signals us when we can go foraging in other places. We have a lot of places in upstate New York and in Vermont, where my husband is from, that we can forage those items. And then I have an urban tea garden because I like making my own teas, and you don't need a ton of space for that.
I love that.
So that's one of the things that I've used a lot of my garden space at this house for. Also, because we knew we weren't staying here very long, I didn't want to just completely cover it in like market garden stuff, because then that doesn't help your resale value. But when somebody sees flowers and herbs, they're like, oh, that's so pretty.
Yeah.
And then we still get something out of it.
Right. Super practical. I love that. I also, like I said, in a lot of the things that even started Permaculture Princess, the idea my husband and I had were we wanted to start landscaping and we wanted to do beautiful landscapes because practical foods can be edible and they can also be beautiful. So I think that is an awesome focus. And if people could start seeing that, you know, I think that's a great message to be sharing. But in addition, you kind of mentioned it briefly, but you're a forager. So tell me what sorts of things you find around your property and exactly how you use them in meal prep, because like I said, this is purely selfish. I want to know, because we're also a zone 5. And so I want to hear what you guys are finding around you.
So like the biggest thing that we have every year is usually the fiddleheads. They're actually really hip now. You're finding them in grocery stores and stuff, which I find hilarious because I've been eating them my whole life. And we get a bunch of those and we freeze a ton of those every year. And they're a great vegetable to just pull out and steam and have with just about anything. We have the fiddleheads, and then ramps we use a lot of when they're in season. They're a wild onion type thing that we just love. We do freeze some of those if we can. The leaves are more garlicky, so they go in a lot of stuff. Chives are everywhere. We have spruce tips right in the backyard. Lots of dandelion, cattails. People are always surprised when I tell them that like cattails and tiger lilies are edible.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that I remember my husband telling me cattails now that you say it, but no, I haven't put it that in a hook in my brain yet to use.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of, like, pretty much every part of the cattail is edible. They're not the greatest, so they're, like, something to keep in your mind for survival food, but the shoots in the early spring are really good. Similarly, like, with the Jerusalem artichokes, those that come out in the spring. And then the tiger lily blossoms. I'm so surprised that more people don't eat tiger lilies because people love squash blossoms and they're so expensive. And tiger lilies, at least around here, are like a dime a dozen. And you can take those blossoms. They taste really similar. And you can stuff them with like goat cheese or rice and herbs or just fry them quick. And they're delicious. And they look so fancy. Mm. And they're really just everywhere. And then mushrooms. There's so many different kinds of mushrooms. We're not super... I'm not a mushroom expert. There are way too many, but I have like my standard handful that I know where they are and where to get them. And those are what I go to. And we use those year round. I'm trying to think. There's lots of like little things like grasses and wintergreen is one of my favorites. It's one of the first things I was able to identify as a child. And I love to make tea out of that. And I pick that all over the Adirondacks.
That's awesome. I am also remembering that foraging, cooking, gardening, you're doing all the things, but you also have children, clearly. And so I want you to just kind of introduce the fact that, like, introduce the ages of your kiddos. I think you mentioned it in the beginning, but also how they help or possibly challenge the sustainable lifestyle. What kind of inspires you as a family in this sustainability permaculture world?
Right now, they're not exactly helpful. My older son is 2, and he's learned that things in the garden can be picked, and like there's some things in the yard that can be picked. So now we have this great challenge of stopping him from eating things he can't eat.
Right.
It is really fun to watch him, though, discover things to eat, and he's a really great berry picker, and he's really great at picking tomatoes before they're ready.
That's my little one too. Oh, she's 2.5, and so she's gotten, actually yesterday I just stopped her from picking like one of our big almost ripe tomatoes, and I made it.
yeah, I was training the beans up the other day because I didn't realize I'd plant vining beans. I thought I planted bush beans, so that was a fun surprise. So I'm training them up, and all of a sudden he throws something past me, and I realize it's one of our giant tomatoes that's still super green.
Oh
no.
Yeah,
so we had fried green tomato sandwiches for lunch.
There you go.
But one of the things about having kids is that it's a big motivation for me, because I want, you know, I'm being an environmental engineer, I know way too much about the contamination that's happening on our planet, and I want to do more for my kids so that they have more, and I want to teach them a better way to get food because it's so important. And I really fully believe that if more people were to alter their diets to a more sustainable way, that we could have a huge impact on our planet. That diet is probably the number one thing that impacts our planet the most. And if I can do anything to teach my children how to do it, then the way that I think works, at least, then I've done my part.
Yeah. No, I think you're totally right. And in this world of, you know, we're trying to teach our kids to be lifelong learners, right? So
right.
The more that we can, this is like, I think that you probably have a great example because you can look at your family and say, hey, this is, my family was doing something great. They were doing the best they could, the best that they know. And like, look at, we have learned along the way that this should be switched up a little bit, or hey, we should get water this way, or we should plant in this form or whatever it is. And it's kind of this neat opportunity to say, you guys might learn something that I don't know, or you might like something that I'm doing on its head. And it's a neat ability to be in that spirit of, oh yeah, there are new technologies. And especially as an engineer, you're a great example to finding new information and then utilizing it, doing something with it.
Absolutely.
We kind of touched on the foraging habits. And obviously I think that your focus on healthy eating and healthy living probably impacts more deeply than we recognize, but I still love the whole wellness circle, right? Everything that's involved in that. So what are 3 to 5 habits that you believe most contribute to better health and wellness? And that can go literally, the board is open, whatever direction you want to take that. Habits that you think might inspire others to focus on their wellness journey.
The biggest thing for me, because I really think that food is the way we're going to change most of the issues that we have with our planet and how it's falling apart, kind of, mm-hmm. is actually learning to cook. And one of the things that I had this conversation with somebody a couple years ago about onions. Okay. She grew up using frozen pre-chopped onions. And then one day decided she was going to save some money. Instead of buying them, she was going to make her own. And obviously she learned that when you cut onions, your eyes tend to water, and she became a snotty mess. And she said, "I'm never doing it again. It's not worth it." And I was just like, why don't you cut an onion when you need it? just that day. Like, she's like, "Well, I would need to cut an onion like every single day." And I'm like, yeah, people do that. Yeah. That's like a thing.
Yeah.
And the thing was that so many people, I feel like, especially our age, aren't cooking. They aren't chopping the onion. They're taking these shortcuts. So that if they were to just start cutting the onion, right? You eventually get faster at cutting that onion. You eventually get a little bit more immune. You're never going to get fully immune to that eye watering thing, but you can do it faster, so it doesn't affect you as much, and it doesn't take as much time, and it's not as scary, right? It's just like you can probably understand, like when you're working out, you need to get the reps in, and as soon as you get the reps in, your body is able to do it easier and faster, and you can then add more weight or you change up the move. And it's the same thing when you're in the kitchen. You just need to get your reps in. You need to get used to it. And then as you get used to it, it gets easier. And then once you've learned to cut the onion quickly, next thing you know, you'll be cutting the garlic quickly. And then all of a sudden, what took you 2 hours to cook a meal now takes you 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the best habit you can do is start cutting the damn onion mm-hmm. and start cooking your meals.
I love that.
Change everything.
I love that. It sounds so simple, but I get goosebumps thinking about it because I grew up with a lot more of the ease of, you know, oh, I'll make a ramen noodle here, or I'll make mac and cheese or whatever, you know. But at the same time, my dad loved cooking. So I got a little bit of both, where like he really made beautiful meals. And then yet at the same time, when I would cook for myself, it was, I'm just going to put it in from a box or out of a package. And so when I went to help out my aunt with the natural cancer therapy, I was 23, and she said something like, "What? Just make a baked potato for lunch today, since I don't have plans." And she like went up to take a nap, and I had to Google how to make a baked potato. Like I didn't know what to put it in the oven with, or what to put the oven at, or yeah. or if I needed to wrap it or poke it or what. I had no idea. So
funny story, I cannot make a baked potato either unless it's over the fire.
Well, there you go. So I have one up on you then. I'll take it, because I love the things that you create. They're beautiful masterpieces. And I definitely think you have an amazing message by telling people there's a lot to be said for making your own food from scratch. And you not only get to spend time with the food, but you also get your digestive system ready and prepared to consume that food. And you usually assimilate your nutrients better. You usually like have a happier meal when you've prepared it. All of these things go into preparing a meal, and you have a really cool message. So thank you for that.
No problem. And one of the other things I love about preparing the meal is that I feel like it brings family time, because you're not going to spend all that time in the kitchen for everybody to sit in front of the TV and eat.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're preparing the meal and then you sit down to eat it with your whole family too.
All right. So any other habits that you think are really important to your wellness journey?
For me and for my sanity personally, I think it's important to get outside without electronics and with your family. And I think that that's probably good for a lot of people because we are a inside electronic society now, and that's just not the way that our bodies are meant to be. So even going for a walk outside, I think, does wonders for your mental health. And being a forager, you know, we go for lots of walks outside. So I think it's really, that's really a huge part of it. Especially, you know, for us, we spend a lot of time outside and we get our food and then we come inside and we cook it. And it's all together as a family and it's a lot of fun.
I like that. So tell me a little bit about, we've kind of talked on these different points and the your value system has come out, but what does abundant health mean to you?
So I knew you were going to ask this question, and I simultaneously love and hate it because I feel like there's so many things, but I think for me personally, it's growing enough to sustainably be able to give back.
Mm.
Right now, we're not in a place where we can do that. So whether, you know, I'm teaching others about sustainable living as much as I can with my blog and doing things like this, but I'd really love to, you know, hold cooking classes or spend the day cleaning up hiking trails or donate some of the food that I've grown back to the society around us, because I believe that being full, like, you know, having enough to eat, being healthy and having balanced enough time to give back to your community is like an important keystone to abundant health, because we are societal creatures, you know? And again, I'm being the environmental engineer, I'm all about the planet. And I feel like creating a society where we can all eat and grow and live together in a sustainable way is really the goal for me.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. And I think that you are doing a great work, not only in your family, but by sharing it and by saying, you know what, if there's one person, two people, three people that find inspiration from this message and can learn something practical, right? Like you said, you cut it down to the very practicalities of cutting an onion. Cut the onion. I love that. You know, because we can say the environment's important all day long, but what does that mean? Like, what do we do with that? And you gave some practical tips for, start with cooking a meal. Cook a meal and care about where you get the food from. That's a great place to start. So I love that message. So where can people find you, connect with you, follow your journey, and of course, see some pictures of the amazing meals you make?
Well, I have my blog, sweetloveandginger.com. And my Instagram is really where I hang out most. So that is sweetloveginger, no and.
Sweetloveginger. Yes, that is where I found you. And that's where we've been able to catch up here and there. And we have children around the same ages. So it's fun seeing our parallel journeys, our zone 5 journeys in different states.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jessica, for coming on. I know that you have been in a couple different places mentally because you have the little one there awake, and I can hear that going on and definitely relate. So I really appreciate you taking the time.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
Awesome. We'll do this again another time. And until then, have a good one.
You too.
It was such a delight talking with Jessica, and I am grateful for the way she is standing up for healthy environmental living and building a strong family along the way. She is clearly passionate about finding better health, and I absolutely love her focus on cooking as a way to teach and encourage our generation to take care of the planet. You can find more about her on her blog, sweetloveandginger.com, or follow her on Instagram at sweetloveginger. Please, if you listen to this podcast, go ahead and take a picture and share it on Instagram. Tag her and me, Permaculture Princess. I would love to hear your thoughts. Until next time, my permaculture-minded, healthy living tribe, be well. Thanks for listening to the Permaculture Princess podcast. For show notes or more information, please visit www.permacultureprincess.com or find me on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, or Pinterest at Permaculture Princess. I do want to mention again that none of my advice or research is intended to diagnose or treat. And you should always consult your own healthcare team when making changes to your health routine. If you have found any value from this podcast, please subscribe so you can get updates and also consider leaving a review. I am often fueled on words of affirmation and I greatly appreciate your feedback. My hope is that you find blessings throughout your day and that you discover a more abundant landscape and life.